the Caribbean or Caribbean?
Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, when I say it's like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Caribbean. Okay, from the top.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Teen Horror Cast, where we watch and discuss horror movies from a teen's perspective. I'm your host, Sage, and I'm joined by my co-host and unpaid intern, my dad.
Spooky hello!
As always, before we begin discussing this week's movie, here is a little content and spoiler warning. This movie and our discussion of it contains things like body horror, gore, death, and suicide. If any of this sounds like too much for you, go ahead and stop listening now. We will also obviously be talking about major spoilers for both the Japanese and American movies, so if you want, you can watch those before you listen. Finally, there are many Japanese names, both of the actors and the film itself, which we may mispronounce. We'll do our best, but apologize if we get them wrong. Okay, on to the summary of the movie. This episode will examine both the 1998 Japanese original and the 2002 American remake. We love them both. The original is a true horror masterwork, and the 2002 version is that rarity among remakes, a great iteration on the original with some things it even improves on. We tend to think of these as two versions of the same film, and because of the unique adherence of the remake to the shots, mood, and story of the original, we will be discussing both simultaneously.
The 1998 Japanese original was directed by then still new to the horror scene director Hideo Nakata, and the screenplay by Hiroshi Takahashi was loosely based on a novel by Koji Suzuki. It stars Nanako Matsushima as journalist and single mother Reiko, and Hiroyuki Sanada as Ryuji, the estranged father of her son Yoichi, played by Rikia Otaka. The 2002 American remake was directed by Gore Verbinski, who later went on to direct a number of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. This surprisingly faithful and successful recreation stars Naomi Watts as Rachel, David Dorfman as her son Aiden, and Martin Henderson as Aiden's absent father, Noah.
Both movies open with a classic horror theme. Two teen girls in an otherwise empty house engaged in the timeless ritual of sharing a scary story, specifically that of a cursed videotape that, once viewed, results in your death 7 days later.
小学生の男の子がさ、家族で伊豆のペンションに泊まったんだって。
Any idea how many electro waves are traveling through your head every second?
I got a better one. Have you heard about this videotape that kills you when you watch it? You start to play it, and it's like somebody's nightmare. Then suddenly, this woman comes on, smiling at you, right? Seeing you through the screen. And as soon as it's over, your phone rings. Someone knows you've watched it.
It turns out one of the girls has seen it, and exactly 7 days ago to boot.
And what they say is, you will die in 7 days. And exactly 7 days later.
Who told you that?
What's your problem?
I've watched it.
It's a story, Katie.
No, me and Josh, we saw it last weekend. We thought it was some kind of sick joke. And then the phone rang. It was a week ago. A week ago tonight.
You're just trying to scare me.
You freak!
You totally fell for it.
No. So, did you guys, you know, do anything?
Like what?
Oh my god, you totally did! You a ho! Tell me now!
No. It really is a tape.
After some malevolent events like the TV turning on by itself, the girl screams in terror moments before she dies. Of fright, or at the hands of something more supernatural.
She confided in you.
Yeah, but she never said anything. Nothing that would explain what happened.
You could find out. It's what you do, isn't it? Ask questions. Rachel, please. I saw her face.
The rest of the film centers around a journalist slowly uncovering the mystery of this cursed videotape.
So who's in the mental hospital?
Becca, Katie's friend.
All right, she was the one who was there when it happened.
So what do you think they were doing up there?
Do you think maybe she was into...
It's not about that. It's about the tape.
Helen, don't even.
What tape?
The one that kills you when you watch it.
Oh, please. What was on the tape?
I haven't seen it, obviously.
But Katie told you she saw this tape.
Not Katie. I heard it from her boy.
You heard it from who?
She was dating this guy, Josh.
Where is he? Josh, is he here?
Josh is dead.
What?
What happened?
Supposedly he killed himself. The same night that Katie died.
Her efforts lead her early on to a cabin in the woods where she finds the tape waiting. After viewing it herself, she begins to have strange experiences, including visions and glimpses of a ghostly girl with long, limp hair hanging over her face. Technology also seems to turn against her, such as cameras, which are no longer able to take a clear photo of her.
That's a pretty cool effect. What does this have to do with the tape?
Take my picture.
Are you going to look at me at least? Is this the same camera?
No. I'll scan the rest.
Things get even more dire when her son accidentally watches the videotape, bringing the curse on himself. With her own and her son's curse clock ticking, she enlists the estranged father of her son in the search for clues to the origin and meaning of the tape. Their search uncovers the history of a psychic girl, Sadako in the Japanese original, Samara in the American remake, who was mistreated by her parents, cruelly murdered, and is now doomed to wander as a vengeful spirit. In life, she could burn images onto film. In death, she etches her horror onto videotape.
Samara, let's talk about the pictures. How did you make them?
I don't make them. I see them.
Finally freeing the girl from her watery grave, the journalist and her son's father rest, exhausted and happy to have freed the tormented spirit of the girl. Music swells and the movie seems about to end, but...
Rachel?
What happened to the girl?
Samara?
Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Is she still in the dark place?
No. We set her free.
In a delightful twist... Well, delightful for the viewer, at least. They soon realize that freeing the girl from her grave was, in fact, the wrong thing to do.
You helped her?
Yeah,
Why did you do that?
What's wrong, honey?
You weren't supposed to help her.
It's okay now. She's not gonna hurt you. She...
Don't you understand, Rachel? She never sleeps.
The journalist comes to understand that the only way to save her son is to make a copy of the tape and have someone else watch it. But who? Alrighty, on to our discussion. So the questions we will cover today are our overall impressions. Is it turn the lights on scary? What were our favorite scenes? What were things we liked in each version in particular? And what were some things that we might change?
But first, the question that you did not hear in that list above that we've been asking in our previous episodes is it right for teens? Friend of the show, Rich, asked a question of us the other day. What horror movie will you be reviewing that isn't right for teens? And it's a really good question, and it made us think. So here are our straight from the mind of a teen thoughts on what that means for us on this podcast.
All right. So I think this is a pretty important thing to clear up. Obviously, it's not possible to make an accurate generalization of such a big group of people. Like, every teen everywhere is
the
not
teens.
Like, yeah, we're not going to be able to make an accurate statement about every single one besides the fact that they're teens.
Maybe you could talk briefly about your own personal experience with horror films. What it like, is there something that's too scary? What does it mean to watch something too scary?
Of course, yeah. So when I was six, I saw Coraline.
I feel like I should take responsibility here and say when you were six, I played Coraline for you. So it wasn't like a choice that you made.
I did not even get through the whole thing. That was maybe even the first movie that really gave me nightmares. Even for a long time, like months after I saw it, it still stuck with me. Looking back on it now, 8 years later, I am glad that I had that experience of being freaked out because it kind of made me realize that I'm able to watch something that scares me and like have nightmares from it and still be okay and be able to do that again.
You know, that moment when I looked down at you, this little six-year-old girl, you know, I've been so excited because I remember I had watched Coraline and I was like, this is a fun stop animation movie that I think you'll really like. I didn't remember all the scary parts and I also didn't look at it through the eyes of a child, which is something that you learn to do as a parent. And boy, did I learn to do it after that. But I wanted to share it with you. I was so excited. And then I remember just looking down and seeing how scared you were at that moment. There was this terrible feeling. And what was the word that you used before?
Anguish.
You were describing the feeling of the character, like Rachel, when she sees Aiden watching the movie.
Mm-hmm. Right? When she realizes that he's seen the tape and he's now cursed to die in 7 days.
Yeah.
It's not as extreme as that.
No, but first time that you screw up as a parent, my heart just sank. I felt so bad because I thought, and I think all parents have this moment where they feel like, oh man, I just screwed up my kid permanently, right? Like, you know, kids are like a sheet of paper that you write on, but you can't erase from. And that's, or at least that's how you feel as a parent. And, you know, what you don't realize, yeah, you have to give credit to kids for being more resilient than that. That's another, like, that's what you're describing is that kind of resiliency and that you can have that experience and survive.
Yeah.
Like, you can process it. Not everything. And like, this is important to say too, right? Like, not everything is appropriate. Mm-hmm. But you just have to know yourself.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about how, like, what defines right for teens. So Coraline, for some adults, that might be too much, and that's fine. And for maybe there are some six-year-olds out there who can handle it. I don't know. So it really depends on your past experiences with horror and just with, you know, movies in general. And I think all we can really do in terms of answering that question is I can share my experience. I can talk about if I thought it was right for me personally. I can talk about what was in the movie, like what the content was, what some potentially off-putting topics might be. And then from there, it's kind of the listener's responsibility to decide if they can handle it.
Yeah, I like that. So I guess we'll probably still keep that question in our roster.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it'll just be more like your personal thoughts on, was it right for this teen, and mm-hmm. what might you look out for?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Should we jump in?
Yeah. First question, as always, overall impressions of these movies. Overall, they are pretty good horror movies. They do what they're supposed to do. They scare you in a good way. There's a twist. I think in terms of both of them on their own, if we look at the Japanese movie as more of a blueprint or foundation for the American one, that makes a difference, I think, in terms of how good it is. Like in The Ring, they don't show too much of...
Yeah, let's talk about that. Describe the difference between Sadako and Samara, and the way they present Sadako and Samara just throughout the whole thing, actually.
So it's this little girl, maybe 10 years old, and she has very long hair covering her face, kind of like scraggly. And I mean, obviously, because she's been in a well for years, and she's
you wouldn't look your best either.
Yeah. And she has this like long white kind of shapeless gown. And a very big theme is the fingernails, how she does not have fingernails, because
it's a very big theme for you.
Yes, because it is very uncomfortable for me. Just fingernails in general, I don't like to think about them that much.
They're weird parts of our body. Yeah,
I don't know. I'd rather avoid them. In both movies, it's revealed when the mom is like splashing around down there in the well, she finds fingernails on the side of the well. And that's when she realizes that like Sadako or Samara was still alive and she was trying to crawl her way out. In both movies, when she comes back out of the TV screen, there's like the shot of her hands like crawling across the floor and she's like dragging herself towards the father. And there are no fingernails. I guess we should have mentioned this earlier, but in the American version, the very first scene is of the two girls watching TV and one of the girls is picking at her fingernails.
Oh yeah, you notice that. I love that.
It's not just like a little thing. Like it's really like she's like biting them and then picking at them. They make me very uncomfortable. I don't know why. It just seems like such a weird thing. Like it's this thing that's connected to your finger, but it's also inside your finger and it's also outside your finger and it's like always growing. But it's just, it's like, it's so weird. I don't like it. And so
after you notice the fingernails, I had not noticed her kind of like chewing at them, but it makes perfect sense, right? Because she's cursed. You would imagine, and Samara is basically in her head, right? Like she's having visions given her to her by Samara. She's chewing on her fingernails. Like it makes so much sense. And you don't even, like that's a perfect example of a second viewing thing. Like the second time
viewing
through.
Is always worth it.
Yep, always
that's
worth it.
That's my motto. But in the American version, I think she's presented a lot more like grimy and dirty.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
In the Japanese version, her gown is new, you know?
I think that's true for like the whole Japanese film. Like you look at, it's so interesting. I mean, we're recording this in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
The American film takes place in Seattle.
Yeah.
And Seattle looks so grimy and like dingy and dirty. And just a lot of the sets that she goes to are grimy and dirty and dingy. The cabin that she goes to, which is a big part of the film, is like all run down. And like in the Japanese version, in contrast, it's all like really nice
everything's
looking.
Everything's very clean and
sunny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is something that I really like about the Japanese version is that it's cheery looking, you know, they still are able to make it scary. And I think that's something I really admire in movies is when they have a kind of cheerful looking set or like imagery, but they are still able to make it scary because sometimes they rely too much on making it look desolate and dark. Then it just becomes like lazy, right?
Yeah, well, those are those classic horror tropes of like, you know, dark scary corners and dark houses. Yeah, you're totally right. It's really quite a feat to make kind of that cheerful, clean appearance of like the cabin in the Japanese version. be really a scary and creepy experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is the thing I don't like about the Japanese version is that, so it's supposed to be like when you die, your heart just stops and your face is frozen in this kind of gruesome looking thing. But it, to me, it looks like anybody could make that face. There's nothing special about it. Yeah. It's just like...
That's how I look in the morning.
Yeah. It just looks like they were screaming. And
these are like
the
death faces, right?
Yeah.
That are supposed to be terrifying.
They're supposed to be scary. I think if they had just made them look a little more unnatural, more like this couldn't have been something that she did naturally.
Yeah.
There's something else going on here.
And do you want to contrast that with the American version?
The American version, they really make it obvious that this person has been through something. Like it's like their face is rotted and there's kind of like black stuff coming out of the mouth and the eyes are sunken in.
It almost looks like they maybe like drowned and were underwater for a long time.
Exactly.
Or something, right?
Yeah. Just like Sadako or Samara.
And they're damp and wet. Mm-hmm, and,
yeah. And I think they do a better job in the American version because that is really...
With the faces, yeah.
Yes, really scary. And the first time you see it, it's this very quick shot. Like, it's kind of like a flashback, I think. The mom of the cursed girl is... So the flashback is like she pulls back the closet door and then you see the girl... kind of huddled in the corner. You see her face for like a split second and then it like kind of falls down, like her head kind of lolls to the
side. It stuck with you, didn't it?
It is really scary. Yeah.
I love, you know, to me that when you see that moment in the film, and this is like the very first scene, right? The long extended scene where the two girls are having this scary story swap and then she ends up dead. Well, actually, no, you don't see that until, you're right. That's a flashback maybe in the first act, I guess.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I realized like, wow, this director really had self-control. Because, you know, they obviously put a lot of effort into that special effect, into the makeup. Because that's, I think I'm quite sure that must be a practical special effect.
Yeah.
Right. We'll talk about the terrible CG. Americans are so addicted to terrible CG. But that practical special effect, I mean, it must have been a lot of effort. They must have really worked on it. And it's unique because there's not a lot of practical special effects. There's not a lot of special effects in general in the film. It feels very like just the horror of the real world. Right?
Yeah.
But it's literally a split second, like you say. So, yeah.
It's great.
And it's so scary.
Because it leaves. Yeah. Because like, even now, I still can't quite remember what it looks like. All that stuck with me is that it is really scary. And this is something that I don't know if
it's like a pure image of fear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever talked about this before, but I just thought of it. Like, there's kind of something to think about how when she dies, she's looking at she's looking at the TV, but then somehow she ends up in the closet and it looks like she's kind of hiding.
Yeah.
From something.
Yeah, like
she looks really in this position where she, like her knees are pulled up to her chest and her hands are like clasped together in between her knees. And she looks scared.
Yeah. It's such an affecting shot and it's there for I bet less than a second.
Yeah.
How, you know, it says a lot that you can just in terms of like the rhythm of that filmmaking that you can put that shot in and it's so brief and it has such an impact on the audience.
Because it gives so much information, right? And also the audience is able to like think about that on their own. Like they can maybe imagine what might have happened that night for her to get there.
Yeah. That's actually a great example of what we were talking about, right? Which is that ambiguity. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to show that whole, like how did she get from the TV room to up to the second floor in her closet? You're just imagining.
Yeah.
And what you're imagining is way worse than anything they could show.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right?
Like, sometimes when horror movies, like, kind of lay out everything that happened, it kind of falls short of your expectations.
Yeah.
I think they did a really good job.
And actually, I think that because you see that face just for a split second, it makes it so much scarier again, this is in The Ring 2002 American version. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much scarier at the end when you finally see his face as well, because you know it's going
to
be bad.
Yeah. To clarify, it's the
father.
Father. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he does die too. And I think at this point we've kind of gone into the next question, which is it Turn the Lights On scary? Folks, we've encountered our first Turn the Lights On scary movie for our podcast. This is without a doubt Turn the Lights On scary. 100%. After I watch this movie, I turn the lights on when I go upstairs.
If I think too hard about this movie, I turn the lights on.
It's more of a visceral reaction. I don't think darkness is really a big theme in the movie, but still, she could be in that dark corner there. So you just got to turn the light on and check.
Well, there's that great scene in Ringu where Reiko has found the tape in the cabin. She watches it. The tape stops playing and the TV screen goes black and she sees reflected in the TV screen Sadako standing in the corner.
Yeah. And turns around.
And she whips her head around and of course nothing's there. That's a really freaky scene.
Really scary, yeah.
And in fact, that's actually one of the things that the American version does really badly.
Messed it up.
Yeah. Man.
They do this thing where this happens multiple times where she's looking at in the TV. It's off. She sees, I think it's a special effect that they did, but it's kind of like a blur.
Yes. It's like, I would call it like a shimmer. Like it's almost a shimmer. Like a heat shimmer.
It does not really fit with the feel of the rest of the movie. And
100% agree.
I think it's excessive.
Gratuitous use of CG.
Yeah. I think it still would have worked if they didn't even like put anything in the TV screen, but it's just like maybe a...
Could have been a shadow. Could have been stand. I mean, yeah, you know.
And then like, she like...
In Ringu, it was literally just some extra standing in a white dress in the background, right? Yeah.
It could have been just like a little thing of music and then she whips her head around.
Yeah.
Because like maybe she just thought she saw something, you know, like maybe the effects of the cassette are already getting to her. And
now you're thinking like a budget filmmaker. Like it's true, though, because, you know, if you hear that music cue and she turns and, you know, she's acting like that conveys something to the audience. That conveys like you can tell I'm scared of something.
You can tell
me.
Something happened without having the visual cue.
Yeah, less CG is more. Mm-hmm. I think they could have taken like just on practical effects in the American Ring. Although there is one CG effect that I like, and that is the little bit of TV like glitching that they add to Samara when she comes out of the TV at the end. We should mention though, we don't like this. So the end of the movie is the same. Sadako comes out and kills the dad. Samara comes out, kills the father. Mm-hmm. So they're very similar in that regard, but there's just more CG to the American version. And one other key difference, which is
they show her face in the American version. I think that was the biggest mistake.
Yeah.
Because as we said earlier, ambiguity is very scary. You have such high expectations for what it might look like. You know, like if someone's been in the water for years and now they're coming out and they're like this kind of supernatural thing, what would they look like? There's no way to
She looks like an angry old man to me.
For some reason, they gave her like a very angry, wrinkled face. I don't like it at all. Looks like a mask, kind of.
We're already in what would we change territory, but like, if I could reshoot it, I would change very little, but I would definitely
just
show the eye.
Yeah. In the Japanese version, there's that iconic shot of the eye looking down. I'm pretty sure you told me this, but like one of the
male crew members.
Yeah, one of the crew members, he like plucked out all his eyelashes just for that shot, which that is real dedication because having no eyelashes is actually has a big effect, you know.
Sure. Also, I can't imagine it felt good.
Yeah.
Also, did he do it himself? Did he have somebody do it? I'm really curious. Like, man, there's a whole backstory I want to know.
I know.
Also,
yeah.
Did he volunteer or did like the director
Did he just show up one day with like no eyelashes? He's like, I'm ready.
Right. Maybe I'll land my big role.
Yeah.
As eyeball.
And
did the director like hint at it? He's like, wow, sure wish somebody with no eyelashes could film this.
Yeah.
Looks pointedly at the intern.
He's like, okay. But yeah, I think that was enough. Just showing that.
Yeah. Restraint. Again, restraint.
Restraint.
We saw restraint early on in the American version, but they couldn't sustain it.
Yeah. Because like the hair is a very big part of like the visual.
Yeah.
Of Sadako. They should have just left it with the hair.
We're definitely in kind of what you would change territory at this point. Maybe you should talk a little bit about what you would change about the Japanese version, mm-hmm. if anything.
Yeah, so I would change Sadako's appearance. I'd make it look more tattered with the gown that she's wearing. Uh-huh. It looks too pristine.
Yeah, it does throw me a little bit. It's really this weird contrast between
like rotting fingers and then this like clean white gown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the American version, there is a pretty big chunk of the movie that I don't like.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah, so...
You're going to the farm.
Going to the farm.
For the second time. First time's okay, right?
First time. So, yeah. So, okay, the first
lay
time,
it out for me. What's the farm? Mm-hmm. Who's going there? Why is she going?
The reporter follows this string of clues. She tracks down the father of Samara, who lives on this farm in this little island somewhere. So she goes to the farm. She kind of confronts the guy. She's like, I just want to... Also, there's this whole thing with the horses in the American version, which it's not even a thing in the Japanese version, but I really like it because horses are such a scary animal. They're so powerful and their hooves look like they could just smash your face in if you were in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Their teeth and their eyes and just everything about them and how they always seem to be like sweating because like, I don't know, it just seems like it's so hard for them to live. I don't know.
It's tough being a horse, man.
Yeah. And so there's a scene while she's on the ferry going to the island. There's a horse in this like big enclosure.
This is Rachel, the journalist.
Yeah. This is after she's been cursed. We're starting to see kind of some of the effects, including the camera thing, which I also want to talk about.
Side effects may include.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you get the call, it's like 7 days. Side effects may include. She goes up to the horse. She's just kind of looking at it because it's a horse and it's cute. But then it starts going crazy and it manages to break out of the crate and then it throws itself over the railing of the ferry. And then there's a shot where everyone rushes out onto the deck. Everyone is looking over. There's a shot where the water's like all foamy because of the
turn of the rotors. Turn,
yeah. Like mm-hmm. that, yeah. And then you see the blood.
Yeah.
And you know that horse has been really mangled. There is very extreme color grading the whole time. They make the whole thing very cool. There's a lot of blues and greens. When you see the blood from the horse, it makes it very striking. It's like, whoa. Because you see,
there's very little red in the movie at all. Mm-hmm.
There's only the scenes in the cabin are where there are warm tones. And I like that choice because it highlights those scenes because they're some of the most important scenes, like where she first watches it and then where eventually she makes the awful decision of releasing Samara.
Yep. Okay, so Rachel goes on the boat. She goes out. She visits Samara's dad. They have a little confab. Yeah, she comes away and he kind of just gives her the brush off, right?
A while ago, there was a story about all the horses on this island
killing
themselves.
Excuse me, Mr. Morgan. I was wondering if you'd have a moment to speak with me. My name's Rachel Keller. I'm a writer with the Seattle PI.
You want to know about the horses?
I didn't mean to. It's just I wasn't able to find a number to reach.
Every now and then a writer comes along. Heard about what happened. So, what is it you're writing, miss? About horses in general or just those that go strange?
I read you had to put so many down.
Most put themselves down. They drown.
How'd they get out?
They just broke through the fences and ran to the shore.
She comes along. She kind of uses that as an excuse to try to get more information, but he just brushes her off. He doesn't seem too friendly. He ends up slamming the door in her face, literally.
Once he realizes that she's really there to talk about his daughter.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. She brings up his daughter. He says, I don't have a daughter. So that seems to be it until later. She comes back and finds this tape of Samara in a hospital being like interrogated.
So she, to be clear, she comes back to the farm
a second time. She comes back. I don't even think that was necessary. So then there's a little bit more information uncovered there where this doctor is interviewing Samara. He says something like, but you don't want to hurt people, right?
But you don't want to hurt her anymore now, do you? You don't want to hurt anyone.
But I do, and I'm sorry. It won't stop.
She says, oh, but I do.
I would have been happy if they cut that whole scene at the hospital. They could have conveyed that information that Samara's psychic other ways.
Yeah.
Through a little bit of like hospital report information. One of the doctors conveys like, oh yeah, that girl, she was spooky. And like, it didn't even have to be long, but they go into a lot of exposition with that tape.
Yeah. So then obviously the dad shows up because she basically broke into his house.
Entering, yeah.
He hits her head. He unplugs the TV that she was watching the tape on and grabs it and follows him. She's kind of talking like, what did you do to her? You know, then he goes up and there's a tub filled with water. There's all these electronics and he puts this like metal thing in his mouth connected to all the other things. And he electrocutes himself.
It's a horse. It's a bit for a
yeah,
horse.
Yeah. It's a bit for a horse. He puts it in his mouth. It's very odd how she just kind of came back at the time that he's planning to do this.
It is. It's all very, it feels very coincidental.
It seems so casual.
The way he's
doing it. In a weird way. Like,
I'm okay with that because it sort of conveys his madness at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And and he's being very methodical about it, almost like workmanlike, the way he'd fix something on the farm. He's like, well, gotta go fix that fence. Well, gotta go kill myself in the tub.
Yeah, and
her reaction afterwards gets me too, which is like she's so horrified, but
she's shocked. Then somehow the dad, Noah,
just shows up.
He just magically shows up and catches her like as she falls, literally.
Yeah.
And then they kind of just leave.
I don't know. You know, they don't tie that scene up at all. It's just like, then they're on the road again.
Because that's a huge thing. Like,
yeah, you literally just watched men kill himself in the tub. Like, do they call the cops? Do they, you know, we don't know. And it's not important for the plot for us to know. And that should be information for the director.
That whole second,
you don't need that.
Yeah, that whole second visit to the farm was not necessary.
Yeah, when we do the teen horror cast cut, that scene's gone.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so then there's this part with, so Aiden, the little boy in...
Let's talk
in
about
the,
Aiden.
Yeah, in the American version. I really like his role. He's a very independent boy.
The Japanese version, the boy doesn't get a lot of screen time.
He's a bit of a prop, I'd say.
He's a little bit of a prop, yeah.
He just kind of is there to occasionally move the story along.
Looks spooky and cute at the same time.
Yeah. In the American version, Aiden has a pretty big role. He seems to know a lot about Samara. He seems to be like connected to her in some way. Like she's telling him what to do sometimes. And he does these drawings with her in them. He's like, she told me to draw them. At one point, he draws the farm before she even goes there. And then she calls him. She's like, why did you draw this? And he's like, she told me to. And this is a scene I don't like, where the way he's saying these things is so ominous. I think it would have been better if he was saying it in a kind of more casual way, because at one point, she's like, where is she now? Or something like that. And he's like, she's in a dark place now. Like,
yeah, I remember that scene.
Or like, she doesn't like it in the barn. The horses keep her up at night. And I wish he had said it in a more... I mean, I'm not blaming him for this. He's like a kid, you know?
Sure.
If he had said it in a way that was more nonchalant...
Because he has all this information, right? Like, obviously, Samara is... He's like plugged into her somehow, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, the way he says it, it's obvious that he knows this is important. So why didn't he tell his mom earlier?
Exactly.
If he had
Aiden
said
is in on it.
Yeah. If he had said it in a way that was like, oh yeah, you know, this, I heard about this thing, you know?
Yeah. His tone should always reflect the fact that he doesn't quite realize the import of what he's
saying. Because
that
makes it scarier, you know?
Then it's like, oh my gosh, like what else is this guy seeing?
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So
one thing that I like about the American version with those drawings is it really is a nice echo of Samara also creating images, whether or not she's creating them on film, which we see samples of at one point in the hospital, or if she's creating images on videotape. She's drawing. And then they call back to that later on when Rachel finds Samara in the well and frees her spirit.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, sometimes a child will cry out for help. Sometimes they'll make drawings. And you're like, oh God, you know, it's a little too saccharine, a little too sweet. But okay, I see you've freed that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
Then the other thing about the pictures. This is something I really like in the Japanese movie, the way they do it. In the Japanese movie, when the dad takes a picture of the mom, it comes out, it's a Polaroid, and that picture of her is really scary. I'd say that might even be one of the scariest images in the film.
So I wanted to make one more comment about that opening scene, especially the American version, because I was really struck. So actually, the Japanese director, Hideo Nakata, he was influenced by Poltergeist quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even though, like, you look at The Ring, you don't necessarily see that, except there is that big element of TV being sort of a conduit for horror.
Yeah.
You definitely, I picked up on that a lot more in the American version. In the beginning, when she's in the kitchen and the TV turns on and it's static.
Static.
It turns, she turns it off, turns back on again, static. And there's something just like that, that static, of course, it's an echo of Poltergeist, right?
They're here.
That static is interesting because static is not, it's not an absence of signal. Static is actually what you're hearing is real radio signals, radio noise, but it comes from a specific source and it's the cosmic background radiation, which is the echo of the Big Bang.
Yeah,
it's literally crazy. It's the universe screaming at us all the time. That's what that static is. You know, and you think about it like that, like it's, The Ring is very much kind of a cosmic horror film, right? Because you think that your actions have had an effect at the end of the movie, and then the actual ending happens and you realize you can't stop it at all. It's an unstoppable force. All you can do is shunt it off on somebody else. You know, it's really, it's unstoppable. So in that sense, it has a very kind of like Lovecraftian cosmic horror feel to it.
Yeah. And something, I don't know, I guess this kind of relates, something that I think about very often, like on a daily basis is I acknowledge to some extent that this isn't true, but how like insignificant we are in comparison to just everything that at this moment, everything that exists in the entire universe that is constantly expanding, by the way. How small we are, you know?
Yeah.
And yet everything means so much to us. Like this podcast.
Yeah, what we're doing right here, right now together, right?
Yeah.
And whoever's crazy. Listening to it right now, right? Listening to our voices.
And in the grand scheme of things, this will have had an impact. Maybe it's a small one, but it will be one.
Yeah, in a universe that is so vast as to be almost meaningless, all we can do is create our own meaning.
Yeah. Right? And we can make things better for the next generation.
I love that. I think that's really nice.
It's kind of a scary concept, too, to think about how, like, sometimes it feels like nothing we do matters. But
sure.
It does to other people. And what other people do matters to us.
Yeah.
We just have to remember that.
I think that's very true, honey.
What a great note to end this on.
Right. I think we've covered everything that we want to talk about, more or less.
So, overall, I would recommend both films. They're pretty good. They're definitely scary. I would not watch this film alone. But that's just me. Who knows? Maybe you can handle it. All right, I think that wraps up this episode. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Teen Horrorcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Teen Horrorcast, where we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what films you'd like to hear us review, and see you next episode. Bye.
Bye, everyone.